You're listening to the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. It's 7:33 on this Wednesday morning, July the 11th. And in this half hour, we have another in our sometime series with members of Wisconsin's congressional delegation. We invite your elected representatives in Washington to talk with you from time to time here on the Ideas Network to find out what they're working on in Washington, issues that are important to you that are before Congress, or maybe those issues you think should be before Congress. We welcome your questions for Ron Kind during this half hour at 1-800-642-1234. 1-800-642-1234 in Madison 263-1890, or send an email with your question to talk@wpr.org. talk@wpr.org. Ron Kind is a Democratic U.S. representative from Wisconsin's 3rd Congressional District. He is a member of the House Ways and Means Committee and Natural Resources Committee. And he joins us by telephone. Good morning.
Good morning, Joy.
Thanks a lot for being with us.
Oh, my pleasure.
Well, let's talk first about the war in Iraq with House Speaker Nancy Pelosi saying that July is going to be a month of action on things to try to bring our troops home from Iraq. What's your stand on this? Should we be withdrawing those troops sooner rather than later?
Well, you know, Joy, it is the number one focus here, as it should be. Whenever you're involved in a conflict like this, it's all hands on deck. And this will be an important month of debate. We've got the Defense Authorization Appropriation Bill, actually, that's going to be coming up shortly. And there are many of us who have felt that we are in desperate need of a new direction. And now the problem is trying to convince the president and the administration that it's time for that new direction. We're starting to see some fractures in his alliance, his coalition in Congress, with some key Republican senators over the last couple of weeks coming out saying, you know, stay the course is not working. We do need a new strategy and start redeploying our forces. But the president's clearly not there yet, and I don't know if we have the 60 votes in the Senate in order to move something out, let alone overcome a presidential veto. But there's going to be an important report coming due this month as well in regards to the action being taken in Iraq. And I'm sure a lot of the focus will be on that and what I perceive as a lack of progress with this whole troop surge idea that is not working that well.
Yeah. That report, according to the draft, says that these benchmarks are not being met by the Iraqi government. And, you know, we just heard President Bush, though, say, hey, this surge has just started. We've just begun. You know, you can't expect.
But, you know, Joy, the key really is figuring out a way to put pressure on the Iraqi government and the factions in Iraq to sit down and make the tough political compromises. They've had 4.5 years now in order to try to strike some type of agreement on how they're going to live in peace with one another. And I've been to Iraq on numerous occasions, and our military command in the field are the first to admit we cannot solve this sectarian strife militarily. It will only be resolved through the compromises that the Sunni-Shia Kurds have to make with one another. And as long as the message is delivered that it's an indefinite, open-ended stay with no time for redeployment, no real conditions and consequences, then there's no incentive for these groups to make those tough compromises, which is essential if they want to avert civil war in their country. And that's the problem I have with the president's current strategy, and that's why I think it makes sense now to start setting some hard and fast date certains for redeployment so the Iraqi government knows that the focus is on them. It's time for them to step up and start taking control and make these decisions, because we are not going to be there forever providing this blanket of security for them.
Yeah. Does it concern you when you hear the Iraqi foreign minister, as he said this week, that if there is a quick withdrawal of U.S. troops, the country will fall into a full-fledged civil war?
Well, of course there's concern. No one wants to see that degenerate into that state and the ensuing bloodshed and a lot of innocent lives caught in that mix. But the problem I have with that is that could happen tomorrow. That could happen 5 or 10 years from now. If those political compromises aren't made, it won't matter when we redeploy forces. It will still occur. And there's been no movement on the Iraqi front to meet these benchmarks, which has been very disappointing. And, in fact, they were talking about going on a 2-month vacation while our troops are out there engaging in very dangerous patrols. And we've had an escalation in violence and a very bloody period over the last couple of months during this troop surge idea, and it's clearly not working. And that's the concern I and many had with the president's troop surge plan earlier this year, is we've tried this before. over the last couple of years, we've had four troop surges without the desired result. I don't know why fifth time was the charm for the president, but clearly there's growing discontent within his own party in Congress, which I think is the only way to put pressure on him and the administration to start charting a new course for us in Iraq.
I know besides the war in Iraq, you are also concerned about and working on the farm bill. What are you doing with that?
Yeah, you know, it's immensely important for the state of Wisconsin because agriculture is still the number one industry. We're employing more people directly or indirectly in the state related to agriculture than any other business, any other industry. And yet for too long, farm bill policies has been really skewed to these big subsidy programs benefiting a few but very large and wealthy entities at the expense of your small to mid-sized family farmers. And we think there's a better way of not only being able to provide support for our farmers, especially when the market collapses as it does from time to time, but redirect investments in rural America that's more fiscally responsible, that we'll get a bigger bang for our buck so it's not so concentrated in just a few hands. And the way we accomplish that is by transitioning these big subsidy programs into risk management, kind of farmer IRA accounts. And by doing so, under the Farm 21 proposal that I and others, including Representatives Ryan and Petri in Wisconsin, introduced with me, we'd find $20 billion in savings over the next 5 years, $50 billion over 10 years that we can redirect then to these incentive-based land and water conservation programs, also into nutrition programs, rural development, the development of renewable energies in rural America. And if we do that, then this next farm bill doesn't have to be so skewed and so heavy at the top to these large entities that have been soaking up most of the limited resources we have available. And we think this is a smarter way. It's non-market, non-trade distorting, and it provides our farmers with risk management tools that they can use to deal with shallow losses with crop insurance or to invest in their business or even to stabilize their income when it fluctuates up and down. But do it in a way that doesn't distort the market, that doesn't lead to greater consolidation, which a lot of these subsidy programs are doing. It's money to the big guys. They're using it to buy out the smaller entities. But it's also driving up land values, which is hurting our family farmers, but especially our beginning farmers who are having a hard time getting into the farming business because of the high costs, upfront costs associated with it.
Janice in La Crosse has a question about the farm bill. Hi,
sure.
Janice, you're on the air.
Yeah, hi, good morning, Ron.
Good morning.
Yeah, thank you. Ron, I just saw this in the movie, the future documentary, The Future of Our Food.
Yeah.
The Future of Food. Anyway, I was like appalled. I thought, you know, Monsanto, Roundup, I mean, you know, they're patenting the corn seeds, and then, you know, the whole thing was really disturbing, you know, and I'm like, what am I eating out there? I mean, it is really, for me, scary when you think that you've got four big giants owning our food and adulterating this food. And I feel like, you know, besides the pesticides and everything else that they're spraying on them, you know, the small farmer, the organic farmer, I'm like, wow, let's get back to this so we know what we're eating. I mean, you know, I did not know what's going on out there now, and it is really scary. And so, and then they think cancer. Well, what are we, what have they
so
done?
Your,
and then
your question
send,
is, I'm sorry, we're running up
okay,
on
okay,
a
okay, sorry, but I'm just saying, what are we doing with, you know, with these farm subsidies, too, the fact that they'll keep, you know, taking the farmers off this land and then keep paying them. I mean,
so will the farm bill take away these corn subsidies?
You know, you're exactly right. She hit the nail on the head because, you know, again, if we do this next farm bill right with the reforms that I and others are advocating, this not only could be the great conservation bill of the 21st century, but it should be the healthy food bill of the 21st century. And there are some great books out there now, Fast Food Nation to Michael Pollan's The Omnivore's Dilemma. Joy, you should get him on your program sometime
and
talk
Adam.
About
mm-hmm.
that. But you take a look at the food system in our country, and virtually everything is traced back to this high fructose corn syrup that's mixed in everything, the back-end processed food. And it's no wonder we've got an obesity epidemic in our country and type 2 juvenile diabetes going through the ceiling. And that's something else that our healthy farm and healthy food bill that we've introduced with good bipartisan support would address, is what type of food are we producing for the consumers of our nation, and especially for our children and elderly who need a different dynamic if we're going to stay healthy as a country.
Thanks, Janice, for the call. And your call is welcome for Ron Kind, Democratic U.S. Representative from Wisconsin's 3rd Congressional District. He's here to answer your questions about the issues before Congress. that are important to you, or the issue that you think should be before Congress. 1-800-642-1234 in Madison, 263-1890. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network. You're listening to the Ideas Network. I'm Joy Cardine. 13 minutes before 8 o'clock, coming up after 8, we will talk with a UW-Madison history professor who has penned a new book, a biography of sorts, on Henry Kissinger. He says that Henry Kissinger is the most recognized but least understood figure in the world today. So we'll try to understand Henry Kissinger coming up after 8 o'clock. Right now, we're understanding some of the issues that are before Congress, talking with Congressman Ron Kind, Democratic U.S. Representative from Wisconsin's 3rd Congressional District, which covers much of western Wisconsin. He is a member of the House Ways and Means Committee and Natural Resources Committee, and he is joining us, as our congressional representatives do from time to time, to talk with you. 1-800-642-1234 in Madison, 263-1890. Nancy in Milwaukee is our next caller. Hi, Nancy. You're on the air.
Good morning. I'd like to go back to Iraq again, please. And the Chicago Tribune, on the same day that it was announced that the United States forces tours would be extended to 15 months instead of their 12, there was also a small article about the fact that the Iraqi forces only have a 3-month tour of duty, then they have a month off from any kind of combat duty, and then they're on again for another 3 months. Now, I find this so obscene and so insulting to America that our people are having these lengthy tours, which cause great distress for their families, and obviously added danger for themselves. And I'm wondering if you could find out if this is true, and if so, if this could be more widely known. I think this would bring about an onslaught of protest from America.
Nancy, I think you're right. And in fact, what I've noticed on my visits to Iraq, too, is the attrition rate for the Iraqi security forces is very, very poor. And they're usually on for a couple of weeks, and then they're allowed a 4 or 5 day furlough, and trying to get these guys back into the ranks and with their units is very, very difficult. And I didn't for the life of me understand why it wasn't our number one priority after we first went in to be focused on training and equipping an Iraqi security force that was capable of handling their own security. But the first 2 years of this venture in Iraq was completely wasted without the focus being on that. And now I think we're paying a very high price, or our troops, I should say, are paying an extremely high price because of the lack of discipline on this front. And at some point, they have to understand, and again, this gets back to redeployment date certains, that it's going to be up to them to take control of their own security in their own country, because our forces cannot and will not remain in the country to do it for them.
Andy in Dodgeville is with us now. Hi, Andy. You're on the air.
Hi, Joy and Ron. Thanks for taking my call. I'm hoping we can talk again about the farm bill.
Sure.
I was not raised on a farm, but I'm interested in getting into dairy farming. I've just graduated from the Wisconsin School of Being Dairy Farmers, and as I'm looking at my options, it's pretty intimidating financially. So I'm hoping, Ron, you can talk about what in particular you're trying to work into the farm bill to make things easier for beginning farmers.
Danny, it's a great question. In fact, I was just on a farm outside of Dodgeville just 2 days ago on the Gary and Rosie Simon farm. They're doing a lot of great biologic practices, conservation programs, and there were a few beginning farmer couples that were there too, and we were discussing these new farmer programs that I'm trying to institute in this next farm bill. Again, trying to make capital more available to you, cheaper for you, lower loan rates for you, so you can invest in not only the land but the equipment to get up and going, making it easier for the transfer of farms to other entities without the regulatory or tax implications. But it's crucial that we be creative in figuring this out, because the average farmer age in Wisconsin now is 56, 57 years old. And we're hearing that a lot of the sons and daughters aren't that interested in staying on for a variety of reasons. And if we're not careful, we're going to see, just through demographics and the aging population in farm country, many of these farms being shut down, sold to development, a lot of productive land being taken out of business. And then you're going to see a huge concentration and who's producing our food and how all that is handled in the future.
Yeah. What do you think, Congressman Kind, about the president saying that some White House aides will not testify before Congress over this U.S. attorney firing scandal?
Well, I tell you, this administration in particular has, I think, gone to the executive privilege defense inordinately so. And if they feel that they've got a legitimate constitutional claim to executive privilege, that's fine, but they shouldn't be the final say in arbiter. This might have to get resolved through the judicial process and have a clear definition. But they seem to be slapping top secret and classified information on everything that they breathe, and that's just nonsensical. Congress is a co-equal branch. We do have oversight responsibilities and capabilities. We should be able to conduct oversight even with the executive branch. And for the president to make this sweeping executive privilege claim over virtually everyone involved in the executive branch is unrealistic, and it's a non-starter. So hopefully we'll be able to reach an agreement to get some of his people up to testify, to answer questions. Otherwise, short of subpoena, I don't know what else the Congress is going to be able to do but go down that road.
Yeah, what's your reaction to the president's commutation of the prison sentence of Louis Libby?
Well, I thought it was disappointing because it was a very serious offense, not only outing an undercover CIA agent's identity, because it not only affects her safety, but everyone that she worked with in her capacity with the CIA, but it also sent a message, you know, that as long as you're loyal to the president, as long as you're willing to lie or cover up for the administration and the policies, or even go after critics of the administration, you know, don't worry, you won't suffer consequences when you violate the law. And it really belies the principle of equal justice under the law in our country. And this really smacks of self-serving, and I think that's what really rubs people the wrong way, is that this smacks of a cover-up. It wasn't just Scooter Libby, but he was following orders to go out and tarnish a person's reputation and then lie about doing it. And so there might be more there, and the president commuting his sentence might be a form of quid pro quo, that we'll take care of you as long as you're not cooperating with the authorities.
One more quick one from me. Cindy Sheehan, the anti-war activist, is back in the news saying that she will run against House Speaker Nancy Pelosi unless Nancy Pelosi introduces articles of impeachment against President Bush and Vice President Cheney. What do you think of that?
Well, Joy, I'm struck as I continuously hold listening sessions throughout the congressional district, the number of times the impeachment issue comes up in discussions. There's a lot of frustration out there that this administration has taken liberties with our liberties in this country, to put it mildly, and that firmer action needs to be taken. But, I mean, short of a clear and dangerous element that the administration is engaged in, because the standard of impeachment's high, and it should be high, unless the country wants to see the Congress devoted every day for the next year and a half on impeachment proceedings with so many other challenging and important issues that we have to be focused on, I don't think there's much interest from Nancy Pelosi or the leadership to go down that route. And, you know, that's really the trade-off that you have to make. But also, not too many people would be satisfied with a President Cheney at the end of the process. So do you go two for one, and then where does it end? Because the next in line